From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine for Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. And on this day, what's in the future for ranked choice voting in Maine? Supporters say they'll fight a new law that could end with it being repealed. And one of Maine's regional workforce boards is suing Governor Paula Page and the state's labor commissioner. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Late last night, the legislature passed a bill that will delay and could repeal the landmark ranked choice voting law that Mainers passed last election day. Supporters of ranked choice voting are angry, and they say they'll launch a people's veto to overturn the legislature's bill. Steve Missler has more.
The bill passed delays implementation of ranked choice voting until voters approve a constitutional amendment to fix the election system. If voters don't approve a constitutional amendment by 2021, the election system is repealed. And despite the four-year window to fix ranked choice voting, the prospect of repeal is very real. That's because voters may never get the chance to consider a constitutional amendment. Two-thirds of the legislature is needed to ratify one. And so far, the votes have been well short of that threshold, much to the chagrin of Democratic Representative Craig Hickman of Winthrop.
And we wonder why people come before our committees and look at us as though they want to throw daggers in our eyes.
Hickman was attempting to persuade lawmakers to defeat the delay and repeal bill late Monday.
It is incumbent upon us, and it's responsible of us, in the truest way, to vote this down and at least give the people the constitutional resolution that they deserve to have the election reform that they have told us they want to have.
The intransigence in this building is astronomical. The opposition to election reform is real. It exists.
Kyle Bailey helped lead the ranked choice ballot initiative last year, and he has spent the last 9 months at the State House trying to protect a new voting system that over 380,000 Mainers supported at the polls. It hasn't gone the way Bailey hoped it would. Some Republicans in the legislature have vowed to repeal the election overhaul, and in May, they received the political cover to help them do just that. A Maine Supreme Judicial Court opinion that says ranked choice voting violated the Maine Constitution in some elections. Since then, Bailey and ranked choice supporters have tried to convince lawmakers to send a constitutional fix to voters. So far, that effort has failed. Bailey's group then tried to convince lawmakers to implement parts of the law that the court didn't review. On Monday, that effort fell apart too. State Senator Bill Diamond is one of several Democrats who joined Republicans to block partial implementation of ranked choice.
For us to put this mother of all nightmares on our local clerks and volunteers and ballot clerks would be unreasonable, unfair, and I would ask you to consider that carefully.
Diamond worried about the consequences and confusion of having two voting systems, one for gubernatorial and legislative elections, another for congressional ones. He was one of two Democrats in the Senate to back the delay and repeal bill. Later, at least 10 Democrats in the House flipped their support for partial implementation and also backed delay and repeal. In a statement, House Speaker Sarah Gideon blamed Maine Republicans for, quote, unrelenting opposition to voter-approved referendum results. But Bailey, with the Maine Committee for Ranked Choice Voting, says his group isn't giving up.
Hopefully, Maine people will see what's happening here and hold them accountable in the next election and also rise up if we move forward with the people's veto, if that's what comes out of tonight, that we're able to move forward and restore ranked choice voting.
It's unclear if there will be electoral consequences for the lawmakers who work to repeal ranked choice voting. But Bailey believes a people's veto initiative is necessary to protect what voters approved last year. And that could mean ranked choice voting will be in effect at the same time Mainers are voting in gubernatorial and congressional primaries in June. That's because a people's veto campaign, if successful, puts a temporary hold on the delay and repeal law just passed by the legislature. But first, ranked choice supporters will have 90 days to collect over 61,000 signatures. The clock begins when and if Governor LePage signs the bill that passed Monday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
One of Maine's regional workforce boards is suing Governor Paula Page and Labor Commissioner John Butera over the state's decision to turn down about $8 million in federal funds for job training. Robbie Feinberg has more.
In the suit, Coastal Counties Workforce Incorporated, based in Brunswick, says that LePage and Butera are violating federal law by not making the funds available under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. In a letter last month to the U.S. Department of Labor, LePage said that Maine would no longer participate in a particular section of the act that sends more than $8 million each year to help fund three regional boards for job training and education. LePage has repeatedly tried to consolidate the three boards into one as a way to reduce costs. However, Kelly McDonald, a lawyer representing Coastal County's workforce, says federal law dictates that once the government makes those funds available to a state, the governor must make them available to local workforce boards.
Under my reading, the governor has absolutely no discretion whatsoever. Once those funds are made available to him, he has to turn around and make them available to the workforce groups, and he's failed to do that.
McDonald says the timing of the lawsuit was partly prompted by a letter from the State Department of Labor to workforce boards on Monday, saying that all contracts using the specific workforce funds would end by November 30th at the latest. Coastal County's Deputy Director Antoinette Mancusi says she hopes the lawsuit will force the state to reverse that decision and accept the federal funds, as she says ending the programs would affect hundreds of employers and job seekers.
We're talking about a really substantial impact to these workers in our region.
Neither the governor's office nor the State Department of Labor would comment on pending court cases. However, last week, a spokesperson for the State Department of Labor told Maine Public that the state will work to find other funding sources to help job seekers who are currently receiving training. The U.S. Department of Labor didn't respond to a request for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
The main backer of a proposed casino operation in York County says he, quote, has no plans to sell the gaming license if voters approve the measure next month. Sean Scott, who has to date avoided questioning from the news media in Maine, appeared as a guest today on Maine Calling with Jennifer Rooks.
Are you going to sell the license?
We have no intention to sell this license.
No intention to, or?
No plan. I mean, we can argue over if it's going to rain next Wednesday, but I can tell you we're here to stay. We've been here nearly 20 years. We've invested in Maine. We've created jobs in Maine, and we've created tax revenue in Maine, and that's our plan to do in York County.
Scott has a controversial history in Maine and elsewhere. He was the initial developer behind what would become Hollywood Slots in Bangor. After a casino license was approved by voters 14 years ago, Scott sold the racetrack and the casino rights to Penn National Gaming for more than $50 million. Under the wording of Question 1, Scott would be the sole recipient of the gaming rights for the York County Casino, which supporters say would create more than 2,000 permanent jobs and generate more than $45 million a year in state tax revenues. But critics question those numbers and Scott's commitment to Maine. On today's Maine Calling, Scott revealed that he claims residence in the Northern Mariana Islands.
I live in Saipan. It's a U.S. territory next to Guam, and like any small town in the U.S., a very tight-knit community, and it's a great place.
But State Representative Louis Lucchini of Ellsworth, who appeared on the program as an opponent of Question 1, says he has a hard time believing Scott's promises.
You know, Mr. Scott just said that he lives in Saipan, but at the same time said he wants to be here for the long haul and that he's going to get a license. So, I mean, we are literally voting on Question 1 and just hoping that he does the right thing and that he doesn't just flip this and make $200 million. I mean, I think that's a big ask for voters of Maine.
Maine Calling will air again tonight at 8, or you can listen anytime at mainepublic.org. Maine has lost more than 2,400 papermaking jobs over the last 6 years. But analysts say the state is making some strides in manufacturing that are infusing segments of the wood products industry with new hope and vitality. As A.J. Higgins reports, the goal is to find new products that require more skill to make.
If you've ever bought cigars with wooden tips, they may have come from Pride Manufacturing in Burnham, Maine. Pride, which employs 145 people, has been a world leader in cigar tips for more than 60 years and also cranks out millions of golf tees from white and yellow birch. A couple of years ago, Pride landed a contract with K-Nex, the Pennsylvania-based company that sells Lincoln Logs. The toy was invented more than 100 years ago by John Lloyd Wright, second son of the architect Frank Lloyd Wright. But Randy Dicker, senior manager of manufacturing at Pride, says it's becoming a big part of the Burnham plant's future. As the pieces of maple are spit out from molding machines in varying lengths, Dicker inspects them for a uniform light maple color while also ensuring that the protective coatings are applied evenly across each surface.
You know, when we worked on that color, of course, it had to meet Connex's needs and meet their lab, plus it went to a third-party lab to make sure that the coatings were toy standard and all that. So it took us a while to get there, but we got there, and that's the accepted color.
Pride Manufacturing is trying to answer a question that Patrick Strouk of the Maine Forest Products Council says is front and center for the industry.
How do we take a piece of lumber or a pound of pulp and add more value to it?
While primary wood products such as pulp and paper, boards and framing lumber, wood pellets and chips have declined over the last 15 years, secondary wood products such as shingles and Lincoln logs have rebounded, generating an economic impact estimated at nearly $2 billion.
The age of having, toothpick mills and wood-turning mills in every town is gone, but we're seeing innovation and families in manufacturing bring some of those businesses back.
And that trend is being aided by changes in the Chinese economy, says Dr. Mindy Crandall, the assistant professor at the University of Maine who has studied the resurgence of Maine's secondary wood products industry.
As China progresses and has higher incomes, their labor costs are also rising. So when we can compete on things like quality, that's where we can start having some of that manufacturing moving back over to the U.S.
Crandall says Maine can compete globally by focusing on products that require a higher level of skill and higher quality of wood. Enter Lincoln Logs, baseball bats, kitchen utensils, and playsets, which Crandall says are driving the secondary manufacturing market in Maine.
We tend to forget about secondary wood products manufacturing and its role in the state, but there are an amazing amount of these small companies that are adding a lot of value to a primary product.
And even some very small Maine companies are in the game. At Longfellow Cedar Shingles in Windsor, Jim Longfellow oversees the family operation, which relies on a diesel generator to run a shingle saw. Longfellow makes arrangements for the delivery of cedar stock and runs the manufacturing process that produces a siding prized by homeowners across the country. But given the daily demands of the business, Longfellow says it's hard to say how much wood he actually goes through.
I really don't know. I don't keep track. We buy it by ton. And so I don't even know how many tons we use, but I don't know. And people will ask me how many shingles that I put out in a day. I really don't know. As many as I can.
Longfellow and other Maine manufacturers say they are constantly searching for new products to maintain a secure foothold in the changing landscape of secondary wood products. Or, as Pride Manufacturing's Randy Dicker is fond of saying,
we're always looking for the next widget.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.